live from the newsroom of the Wall Street Journal, the program that puts it all into focus.
We can't be casual. We can't be sitting back hoping that things get better.
Welcome to the Daily Wrap. And now, here's your host, Michael Kastner.
Apple CEO Steve Jobs has died. Tonight we go to All Things Digital, All Things D's Walt Mossberg, who knew him well. He'll join us. Senate leaders want millionaires to pay a 5% tax hike. We'll go to Washington for more. And grown-ups might not listen too much about bullying, but man's best friend, they are helping out. We'll explain. Welcome to the Daily Wrap from the Wall Street Journal. I'm Michael Kastner. The Apple Board of Directors announced tonight, "We are deeply saddened to announce that Steve Jobs has passed away today. Steve's brilliance, passion, and energy were the source of countless innovations that enrich and improve all of our lives. The world is immeasurably better because of Steve. His greatest love was for his wife, Lorraine, and his family. Our hearts go out to them and to all who were touched by his extraordinary gifts." And that's an end quote. The homepage of Apple's website this evening was switched to a full-page image of Jobs. It replaced the very latest Apple product, the iPhone 4S, which was just announced yesterday. And it says simply, "Steve Jobs, 1955 to 2011. He was the mastermind behind Apple's iPhone, iPad, iPod, iMac, and iTunes. He was 56 years old. All Things D, All Things Digital's Walt Mossberg knew Steve Jobs well, interviewed him many, many times. He joins us now. Walt, Steve Jobs changed the way we saw the world, the way we heard things. He was such an innovator.
Well, it changed a whole lot of businesses. There were a number of people who were responsible for the PC revolution. And he was one of them. He was somebody, I think, as I said, on the level of a Henry Ford or a Thomas Edison for this era. He also was the guy who kind of has been leading us into what I am firmly convinced is the post-PC era, where we have devices like smartphones and tablets that and cloud services and so forth that do all kinds of things. I mean, the artificial intelligence service for the iPhone and the iCloud service that the company announced just yesterday were things he was deeply involved in before his retirement and now his death. I don't think most people understood that privately he brought a tremendous passion to this. It is really true that he thought both big and small. He thought in broad, sweeping terms about where we were going with technology and what happened at what he liked to call the intersection of technology and art, liberal arts. But it's also true that he thought about the smallest detail in these products, and that's why he not only saved the company, Apple, but managed to put it in a position where it consistently wins the hearts of people, where it consistently comes out on top in customer satisfaction, because he believed very much in delighting customers. He did not manage for the quarter. He did not manage for the stock price, as high as the stock price was. He really believes, it's a cliche, but Steve Jobs really believed it, that the only thing worth doing with your life was trying to change the world.
We're talking with Walt Mossberg, the man behind All Things D, All Things Digital. You know, no offense to this man, to Tim Cook, but yesterday wasn't the same. This is your world, Walt. We just live in it. You know, you're the tech guy, but being a consumer, it wasn't the same yesterday without Steve Jobs. And I think that's why you have got a tech guy where people around the world are feeling this. This is a very big deal, not just for folks in the tech industry, but for consumers.
Yeah, but it's a little unfair. The products that were announced yesterday, Steve Jobs was involved in developing.
Right.
Approved every one of them.
I meant the presentation, not having him there.
These were some different set of things.
Yeah.
So to the extent people didn't like them, you know, that would have been true if Steve Jobs had been there.
Yeah, please understand, I'm talking about the presentation. Yeah, having him there.
Framing of them and the explanation of them, I don't think you can replace somebody like him. And it's not a knock against Tim Cook, who, by the way, was at Steve Jobs' side and in all of his top team meetings for about 14 years, and without whom I don't think these products that we all attribute correctly to Steve Jobs could have been built as elegantly and as rapidly as they were, and sold as much as they did, and had the impact they had.
Let me ask you this:
Tim Cook is not Steve Jobs. I'm not Steve Jobs, and you're not Steve Jobs. And there's just nothing you can say to get around that.
Let me ask you this. How do you see Apple moving forward without him? I know he left as, the day-to-day operations when it was announced in June.
Well, I think they have a long product pipeline. I think the culture of forward thinking and kind of no compromise is something that he inculcated into the company, and that Tim Cook, who I've had a chance to talk to, certainly shares. The people just below Tim Cook are the same as the people below Steve Jobs. So I think they're probably on course, on a Steve Jobs-type course, for several years at least. And if the culture and the talent continues to operate the way that it did with him, they could keep going with this kind of impact longer, but we'll just have to see.
Walt Mossberg, the man behind All Things D, All Things Digital, thank you for taking the time tonight. I know you cared very much for this man, and we thank you for your interviews with him. Gave us an insight that we never got anywhere else, and we very, very much appreciate it. Thank you for being with us tonight.
Bye.
In 2004, Steve Jobs said publicly he had a rare form of pancreatic cancer. In 2009, it was revealed that he had gone to a Memphis hospital for a liver transplant. He took 3 medical leaves from Apple. He did not share the details. When it was announced that he was going to be stepping aside and his chief lieutenant, Tim Cook, was going to be taking over, there was a picture of him that was posted that very day. It was in June. It was on TMZ, and he looked to be with a caretaker or a friend, and you could tell. You could just tell that he was very, very sick. He was 56 years old, and, you know, you can really say this. He was a true American. He truly was. He changed. Sit and think about how we always listened to music. You know, you grow up in the 60s and 70s and you're listening to your records and then your cassettes and then your 8-tracks and CDs. And I mean, do you have any of those around? It's all digital. And it's all because of this guy. You take a look at the smartphone. This guy he's such an innovator, the iPad. And he's truly one of those people that you just got to sit and think, you know, when you leave this planet, you want to leave it a better place. And I think, looking back, Steve Jobs will absolutely be able to say that he left this planet a better place. As the Daily Wrap continues, we'll take a look at the presidential race 2012. How much do you really like your presidential candidate? We're going to be talking with an expert in branding who will tell us what the departure of, yes, there's other breaking news, the departure of Sarah Palin from any possible run for the GOP nomination is going to mean for the other candidates. This and more tonight on The Daily Wrap from The Wall Street Journal. I'm Michael Kastner.
Smart, humorous, civilized. This is The Daily Wrap with Michael Kastner.
The Daily Wrap continues. Michael Kastner with you. As more news develops, we're going to continue our coverage tonight as well of the passing of Apple founder Steve Jobs. He passed away. He's 56 years old. And other major news that had happened tonight as well. Sarah Palin has announced that she is not going to be running for president. She made an announcement in a letter to supporters tonight. It's dated today from Wasilla, Alaska. She says, after much prayer and serious consideration, I have decided I will not be seeking the 2012 GOP nomination for President of the United States. As always, my family comes first, and obviously Todd and I put great consideration into family life before making any decision. She says that I believe that at this time I can be more effective in a decisive role to help elect other true public servants to office, from the nation's governors to congressional seats and the presidency. Joining us right now is Donna Sturgis. She's president of Biology Incorporated. It's a neuromarketing firm that works with global brands, taking a look at, well, how much do you love your pick for president in 2012 or any of the leaders? First off, well, let's get into what you know about Sarah Palin and how people responded to her.
Well, hi, Michael. Good evening.
Evening.
We have some very surprising and interesting information about Sarah Palin. I think you already know that Biology does work for brands all over the world and why people buy what they buy. And in this case, you know, why are people going to buy one candidate over another? And one of the things we found in our study is Sarah Palin has a surprising hold on the young, under 35-year-old Republican or Republican-leaning candidate. So her announcement that she's not going to run, from our data we know that those votes that she would be garnering in that younger age bracket will fall evenly to Romney and Perry.
And so Perry is not affected whatsoever, even considering his slide in the polls at this point. He would still get the Palin split vote.
Yes, he would. And I think the things we've learned about Sarah Palin are actually quite interesting. And her command among the young 35 and under voter is something that Romney and Perry both have to focus on to pull that franchise. And right now the race is reasonably tight between Romney and Perry, and there's an opportunity for one of them to get well ahead on the young vote.
Taking a look at the way things are now, Donna, you know, you try and sit and think about history, going back so many different election seasons. Can you recall a time when, well, we're taking a look at the GOP now, because obviously the Democratic nominee is presumably Barack Obama. Do you recall a time when a party went, oh, let's try this one. Oh, no, not you. How about you? Oh, no, not you. There seems to be remarkable dissatisfaction on the right this time around.
Well, you know, anything can happen. And I think that's the point you're making. And personally, I don't recollect a time where we've seen such high numbers in the voter frustration of the candidates being offered up by the Republican Party or any party for that matter. And that clearly comes out in our data that people are frustrated. I mean, we've seen all the Chris Christie action because people are looking for someone who they think is a stronger candidate against Obama. We did include Obama in our study, and if the election were held today, according to our research, he would win. But he has some weaknesses, and one of his weaknesses, interestingly enough, is trust. And he will have to work on that. I mean, it's quite surprising to us how much the young Republican and Republican-leaning voters trusted Sarah Palin, believed she was going to take action on jobs. She has a number of very high-scoring points in our study. And so with her out of the race, one of these other candidates is going to have to strengthen themselves on these dimensions.
You know, we're talking with Donna Sturgis. She's president of Biology Incorporated. It's a neuromarketing firm that works with global brands. And you know, this study that they're doing, checking out exactly, you know, who would lead and why and why not. One of the things that you would think is when you're taking a look at Sarah Palin and the trust that they have there, has she laid out very specific plans of, for instance, how she would do jobs as opposed to, say, Barack Obama's laid out his plans? He happens to be in office. So the idea of trust, I find kind of interesting.
I find it interesting, too. And, you know, Michael, our study, our research gets at why people feel the way they do with candidates. We don't go after the rational response that people have to candidates. We focus on how people feel about these candidates, and I think that's why some of these interesting dimensions, they equally find Sarah Palin frightening. So to your point, you know, a president has to lay out a plan. An opposing candidate perhaps has the ability to make larger claims without laying out a plan. And Romney is going to have to focus on some of this if he's going to pull ahead.
All right. Thank you so much for being with us. Donna Sturges, president of Biology Incorporated, a neuromarketing firm that works with global brands. We sure appreciate your time. Thanks for being with us. The trial of Conrad Murray, Michael Jackson's doctor, continued today. More of the tapes that were played in the courtroom, of very shocking tapes of Michael Jackson, apparently recorded, from what I understand, on Conrad Murray's iPhone. Jackson is slurring his speech horribly. And as you'll notice, too, far from that high-pitched, somewhat feminine voice, whatever terminology you want to use, I don't want anybody getting ticked off, but his speech is slurred and very, very low. It's kind of a change what we're used to hearing. He's talking about a children's hospital. What he's saying is they're sick because they're depressed, children. Their mind is depressing them. I want to give them that. I care about them, them angels. God wants me to do it. God wants me to do it. I'm going to do it, Conrad. I know you would. At one point, he says, "Are you okay?" Michael Jackson doesn't answer. And then about 20 seconds or so later on, Jackson says, "Sleep." Horrible, horrible stuff. So Daily Wrap continues as we speak about children bullying. Parents or grown-ups don't seem to get it, but man's best friend does. That ahead on The Daily Wrap.
The Daily Wrap with Michael Kastner. More illuminating, less agitating.
The Daily Wrap continues. Michael Kastner with you. Well, it turns out that the Senate leaders are now saying that they want to see a tax on the nation's highest earners. They're talking about a 5% surtax on millionaires. Joining us right now is Scott Wong, congressional reporter for Politico.com. Scott, thanks so much for being with us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So what is the surtax for specifically, and can we tell, do we know where they came up with 5%? Why not 4? Why not 6?
Well, I think it had to do with being able to pay for the complete proposal put forth, jobs proposal put forth by President Obama. And actually, as I was just sitting here on hold, I got an email from Democrats saying that they're actually going to raise it from 5% now to 5.6%. This would take effect in 2013, not 2012 as had originally been planned. So this is actually some late changes tonight, but I think it's now at 5.6%.
Well, one would have to ask then, what do they think the response is going to be, obviously, on the other side of the aisle? And also, as they're talking about this in the Senate, what do they think is going to happen in the Republican-controlled House, the 5% or the 5.6%? Mm-hmm. It seems like we're talking about a non-starter as far as the Speaker of the House is concerned.
Yeah, I think we already know the answer. You know, Republicans have balked at any Democratic attempts to raise taxes this past year. You're correct. They see it as a non-starter. We've seen that from Mitch McConnell over in the Senate. We've seen that from John Boehner, the Speaker in the House, who controls the House. And so, you know, Democrats, I think, are using this more as a political point rather than, any major breakthrough on policy. They're seeing this as a real winner politically in order to be able to draw the differences between Democrats and Republicans. They see this as a winner because, they can talk about how millionaires and billionaires should be contributing more and paying their fair share, which is a message that really resonates with their base.
Here's what Harry Reid had to say at a press conference on Capitol Hill today.
We're going to move to have the richest of the rich pay a little bit more. We're going to do everything we can to get Americans back to work, even if it means millionaires in America have to contribute a little bit more tomorrow than they do today. It's a 5% surtax, whatever the rate is. For example, today, 35%, it raised it to 40%.
Now, I believe it was a poll from CBS, if I'm not mistaken, about the number of Americans who wouldn't mind a tax on richer Americans. I want to say it was a 60 percentile range. Does that sound right?
I haven't seen the exact poll you're talking about, although Harry Reid did cite some poll numbers today. He said it was clearly over a majority of even Republicans who supported taxing millionaires and billionaires at a higher rate. So I think that may be what you're talking about.
I believe it says, here's a headline. It says, most want taxes on millionaires increased. Should taxes on millionaires be increased in order to lower the deficit? Yes, 64%. No, 30%. Obviously, the number higher with Democrats than with Republicans. The high was 83% with Democrats and 40% with Republicans. At this point, we're talking with Scott Wong, a congressional reporter for Politico.com. At this point, does this just sound to you like it's politics for the 2012 election? Because as we pointed out, chance of this going down the road and having any success in the Republican controlled House is just not going to happen.
Well, you understand that this jobs plan that the president presented in a speech to Congress several weeks back, it comes at a time when his job approval rating is low. Congress's approvals are at an all-time low, I think, somewhere around 12%.
Mm-hmm.
Americans want to see improvement in the job market and the economy, and those who run Washington realize that if something doesn't change soon, many of them will be out of a job next year after the 2012 election. So I think, as you pointed out, this is not likely to pass. You need 60 votes in the Senate to get anything through. And even with these changes, Harry Reid isn't sure it's going to get unanimous support from his 53-member caucus, let alone any Republicans.
Yeah, there's a number of dissenters already. All right, thank you, Scott Wong, congressional reporter for Politico.com. Thanks for being with us. Bullying is an epidemic. It's all across this country in our schools, and now we have the aspect of cyberbullying. The teachers, administrations, and state legislatures are all trying to figure out how do we tackle this problem. One answer is with dogs. Joining us right now is Sharon Peters. She writes for Pet Talk column for the USA Today. Thanks so much for being with us.
Happy to be here with you.
How do dogs enter into this picture? How can they help fight bullying?
Well, it's kind of interesting. There are several programs in which dogs are taken into the classrooms of generally younger children. So it's kindergarten through, let's say, age or grade 6, 7, or 8.
Mm-hmm.
And we all know that children have a special affinity for animals, and there's a gradual process that these trainers use in which they get the child to kind of bond with the dog, and then they challenge the child by saying, how do you think this dog manages to get to eat or drink? If nobody takes care of this dog, he doesn't get any food. He doesn't get anything to drink. And if somebody treats him meanly, who helps him? Nobody does. And so kids are beginning to learn a little bit about empathy because this is an animal that's vulnerable and doesn't have an ability to take care of itself, speak for itself. Then they shift the conversation to, so what do you think it feels like if you're a child who doesn't have very many friends, and nobody's speaking for you,
mm-hmm.
and nobody's taking care of you, and somebody's mean to you, how do you think that feels? Now, it's clearly very artfully done by people who know a lot about child development and how children's brains work, but frankly, I was a little skeptical of some of the results that I was hearing about until they explained to me the step-by-step process, and suddenly it begins to make good sense.
This is done by a program called No More Bullies, correct?
Yes, there are actually several. No More Bullies is one that's done in the Kansas City area by an animal rescue group called Wayside Waifs, and they've been, this program has been going on for some number of years, but there are several other programs around the country that are fairly similar. It's never one trip to the classroom. It's always at least five, sometimes 10, and there's one program that is a several-week curriculum in which the teachers are given the curriculum, but dogs are the focal point, and they present this throughout the entire school year.
We're talking with Sharon Peter. She writes the Pet Talk column for USA Today about, well, dogs helping fight bullying in school. And no, not by sicking the dogs, actually by licks. Have they been able to measure yet any success rate? Have they seen schools or school districts that are using this technique, using these dogs? Have they seen their incidence of reported bullying drop at all?
They have. All of them report this anecdotally. And I talk to the principals or the school counselors in all of these in schools that run all of these programs that I wrote about, and every one of them says it has an enormous difference. There's only, in terms of how much bullying and how much just kind of mean-spirited bad behavior goes on.
Sharon Peters writes for the Pet Talk column for USA Today. Thanks so much for being with us. We appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And coming up just shortly, we'll have obviously the very latest on the death of Steve Jobs tonight, and from a speech that he gave, one of the few commencement speeches that he gave, where he told everybody to stay young and stay foolish. But now it's time for your news wrap. Here is the Wall Street Journal's Bruce Vail.
The Occupy Wall Street demonstrators are getting support outside of Wall Street in Boston. Dozens of Northeastern University students have joined a nationwide student walkout to support the New York protests against corporate control of government and higher education costs. A group called Occupy Philadelphia plans to protest tomorrow, and there's an Occupy Tampa demonstration scheduled as well. Some labor unions are supporting the protesters. Today, Teamsters President Jimmy Hoffa said the Teamsters stand in solidarity with the Occupy Wall Street movement. The involuntary manslaughter trial of Dr. Conrad Murray, who was charged in Michael Jackson's death, is moving into the forensics phase, with jurors set to hear next from investigators and detectives. Murray has pleaded not guilty. He does face up to 4 years in prison and the loss of his medical license if he is convicted. Have you been having troubles doing your online banking with Bank of America? Today was the sixth straight day the bank has had problems with its website, and they have been keeping people from accessing their accounts. Now, if you've been forced to go into a branch and use a teller, you may get hit with a fee. But the bank said it will work with customers on that issue on an individual basis. There is a lot of sadness in the tech world tonight as Apple co-founder, chairman, and former CEO Steve Jobs has passed away at age 56. The company did not specify the cause of his death, but Jobs had battled pancreatic cancer, and he received a liver transplant in 2009. In August, he stepped down as CEO, but his death nevertheless raises a question for Apple of how the company will sustain its success without his vision and guidance. Tiger Woods is slowly working his way back into favor with the corporate world. Today, luxury watchmaker Rolex said it signed Woods as one of its ambassadors. Woods used to have an endorsement contract with watchmaker Tag Heuer, but that company dropped him following his private life scandal back in 2009. He hasn't won a golf tournament in nearly 2 years, but next time you see him, he'll probably be wearing a nice watch.
Thank you, Bruce. As the Daily Wrap continues, We're going to be talking with Nando DeFino, Wall Street Journal reporter, about the very latest on the NBA shutdown and one of the very rare times that Steve Jobs spoke out. He did a commencement speech in which he basically told tomorrow's, well, the future of America, the graduates, how to stay young and to stay foolish. We try and do that every day here on The Daily Wrap from The Wall Street Journal.
Fresh insights, candid opinion, world-class reporting. This is The Daily Wrap with Michael Kastner.
The Daily Wrap continues. Michael Kastner with you. We have the latest on the NBA lockout. And is there any chance that the NBA season is going to be canceled? We've got some preseason already wrapped up. Nando DeFino, Wall Street Journal reporter, joins us right now. Nando, what is the latest from the NBA side?
The latest is pretty much nothing's going on. It's just kind of a stagnant state with rumors of each side, you know, pointing and yelling at each other and having to step away from the table. So if you're an NBA fan, it's not good news.
Right. You know, I hear, you know, hearts sinking all across this country right now. What is this about the possibility of them going overseas?
Well, a lot of the players, you know, figured if we're going to be locked out, we might as well just go make some money somewhere else. And a lot of these teams, you know, Turkey, China, some Israel teams are willing to pay a lot of money, obviously, to have these guys there. I mean, they're talking about Kobe Bryant getting paid $6 million for, you know, playing 10 to 15 games in Italy. I mean, the money that they'd get just for, you know, fans coming to watch a lot of these NBA superstars is it's almost worth it.
At this point, they have canceled, what, a couple of weeks of preseason? And how is it looking? I mean, is it looking pretty good that we're talking about just dumping the season? And what's the cutoff point where they say, you know what? No, too late.
I think, at first they're going to start with the preseason, which they did yesterday. And now they say if we're not going to have anything by Monday, we're going to miss the first 2 weeks of the season. And then I think, you know, late October maybe. I mean, the NBA, they can pick things up kind of quickly if they need to, but the general sentiment has been prepare yourselves for an entire lost season. They're so far apart, and, you know, it's not like the NFL where they just had some minor things to work out.
Yeah.
They're talking about, you know, teams, most of the teams have losses and operating losses in the NBA, so it's kind of a different story. So they're very far apart. You could see a season wiped out very easily here.
Good Lord. And is there any figure at this point now how much money we're talking about folks losing, concessions, you know, the ticket sales, all of that stuff?
There haven't been any you know, concise estimates on that yet, but that's the part that's really going to hurt the most people is, you know, you read a story about in Boston, this bar that just opened across the street from the state or from the arena, and, you know, they're saying we're going to have to not have people working, we're going to lose a ton of money that we were just depending on for these 41 home games and, you know, whatever playoffs that might have after that. It's the little people, once again, who are going to get hurt by this whole thing, the concession workers, the,
yeah,
the bartenders, guys selling you peanuts.
And then, of course, the fans, and they're always the last ones. Nando DeFino, Wall Street Journal reporter, thank you so much for being with us.
Anytime. My pleasure.
Apple co-founder, CEO Steve Jobs passed away tonight. I mean, this guy, he created the personal computer, the iPad, the iPod, the iPhone. He was a true innovator. He gave the commencement speech at Stanford University. This was in 2005. There's a favorite little clip we're going to play for you here. He's referring to the Whole Earth Catalog. Remember that? Do you? It's one of the Bibles of the older generation, if I shall say that. They put out a bunch of issues of the Whole Earth Catalog, and when it run its course, as Steve Jobs says, they put out a final issue. And this is what he had to say about the information he saw in the Whole Earth Catalog.
On the back cover of their final issue was a photograph of an early morning country road, the kind you might find yourself hitchhiking on if you were so adventurous. Beneath it were the words, "Stay hungry, stay foolish." It was their farewell message as they signed off, "Stay hungry, stay foolish." And I have always wished that for myself. And now, as you graduate to begin anew, I wish that for you. Stay hungry, stay foolish. Thank you all very much.
In that same address, Steve Jobs said, "Remembering that I'll be dead soon is the most important tool I'll ever encounter to help me make the big choices in my life. Because almost everything, all external expectations, all pride, all fear of embarrassment or failure, these things just fall away in the face of death, leaving only what is truly important. Remembering that you're going to die is the best way I know to avoid the trap of thinking you have something to lose. You're already naked. There is no reason not to follow your heart." Steve Jobs was 56 years old. He was a true innovator, and I don't know that we'll ever see anybody like him, at least in the near future. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter, follow us on Facebook, follow us on Google Plus, which all of it going crazy over the news of Steve Jobs tonight. A lot of people changing their profile pictures to Steve Jobs. Just go to our show page, dailywrapwsj.com. From the Wall Street Journal, I'm Michael Kastner, and that is your Daily Wrap.